Everyone, hello, hello, hello. My name is Michelle Zeman, and I am the host of Safe Space, the ABA podcast. Please be sure to listen up for your two code words so that way you can get yourself a free CEU. I am beyond excited to be talking to my guest for tonight. Super wonderful human being, but we're going to be talking a lot about non-contingent reinforcement tonight. So along with me, I have Daniel Zimmerman of DaVinci NCR Services, LLC. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, everybody, and aloha from Hawaii. It's an honor to be here with you, Michelle, and I can't wait to dive into non-contingent reinforcement, what I like to perceive as the magic that really makes the world go round.
Oh, love it. I'm so excited to talk about this because, honestly, this is not talked about enough, and you know, we recently had an episode on Ascent, and there are still people who come up to me and they're like, oh my God, Ascent is so new. It's like, no, it's not. It's not new. It's not.
It's new in terms of when we're talking about mental health, but Ascent has been in the Webster's Dictionary a long time, and it means the same as it did back when it was invented, doesn't it?
Exactly. Exactly. Huh. So can you provide an overview on non-contingent reinforcement and Ascent-based reinforcement programming?
Absolutely. I think it's really great you brought up Ascent because Ascent is really pivotal to why non-contingent reinforcement might be so important. Let's really quickly define Ascent as opposed to consent. Of course, when you ascent and you consent, those things both have the same function, but consent is a verbal sign, and ascent is through your body language or through the context and the circumstance in general from observing that person or their sounds, their noises, their mannerisms, whatever. You could tell if they approve of what is going on with them or not, if they approve of what you have asked them to do or not. A common example is he grunted with assent, or perhaps he or she or they screamed to remove their assent, right?
Yeah.
Often, perhaps why assent is so valuable, we really always want to be providing a service that our clients, our consumers, our families are on board with, and they want to be part of their lives. And that's why I had started this organization, DaVinci NCR Services, LLC. Our mission is to create a totally inclusive environment for consumers of ABA that is both trauma assumed and ensures the amount of dignity that the clients deserve and are entitled to. The other advantage of using a strictly non-contingent reinforcement-based model is it's available to a large population of consumers of ABA that have had a history of trauma that precludes them from benefiting from traditional ABA services. This being because a lot of times in traumatic instances throughout our lives, there have been demands placed on us during those instances. And if our therapy involves complying to certain demands, for some people, this is going to be triggering. It will be a common setting event and often decrease the quality of a traditional ABA service that doesn't include an emphasis on allowing non-contingent reinforcement or rewards or unconditional love and understanding to your clients. And I want to be really clear that this is not to say that traditional ABA has none of that, and that's not what I'd like to produce at all with non-contingent reinforcement-based models, is the thought that ABA does not use non-contingent reinforcement. In fact, it's been a part of the programming for a very long time, and it's what we call a schedule of reinforcement. So the key here is if we're thinking about how often we need something, and we have the frequency of our behaviors. For instance, the amount of times I drink coffee a day, that indicates how much coffee I am used to and how much coffee I generally need to function on a daily basis. So in my own right, I will reward myself non-contingently with coffee about 3-4, sometimes 5 times a day, depending upon sometimes which day it is in the work week. Another common example is the daily dose of sunshine we all get from the sunrise, the sunset. We really need those things. And just imagine if perhaps something that you expect without you having to do anything, like the sun or perhaps the oxygen in the air, imagine if that was not available in your environment, and how much that might affect your behavior in perhaps the mannerisms and the functions of what you do, creating stress, maybe some negative occurrences that you would rather avoid. So non-contingent reinforcement will prevent a lot of this natural stress, frustration, and extinction-based reaction that occurs throughout our bodies, throughout our social behaviors, by providing a little bit of satiation that is innate in the human condition we all come to take for granted sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, and it's interesting because non-contingent reinforcement is something that we naturally need in our daily lives, you know? So that's something that if we need it outside of work or even within work, imagine how our clients are feeling, you know? Imagine what they need to get through their day.
Absolutely. Everybody has a different experience with different expectations that are begotten by living their daily lives. And it's not to say that people are developing entitlements, but their behaviors are indicating their needs. And even difficult, what they call maladaptive or problem behaviors, those are more communicative in my view, that perhaps there is a missing element in the non-contingent reinforcement of that day. I'll give an example. For instance, if you're expecting to be able to watch your favorite late night comedy, and it's all of a sudden not there, and Jimmy Fallon, for instance, just went to 4 days a week. Dear Lord, how are people going to react without Jimmy Fallon 5 days a week? You know, they'd probably be a little bummed out. Maybe they have a few arguments during the time they would have normally been watching him, feeling that loss. But it goes deeper than that, right? Imagine if you hadn't had any interaction throughout the whole day, or for some, perhaps if you didn't have any chance to be alone throughout the whole day. And this is something that people give to you non-contingently because it's polite, right? Sometimes to leave people alone. So we really have to be thinking about what are these things that we take for granted in our daily lives, and how can we make sure that we allow the consumers of ABA services to both receive the expectations that allow them to thrive and receive an opportunity to learn in that environment where they can maybe pair that that comfort, that joy, that reinforcement, whatever they're getting that they kind of live for each day, with a learning program that fits their needs.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, NCR and something called PFA, for those of you who do not know what PFA stands for, it's Practical Functional Assessment and Skill-Based Treatment. They go very hand in hand with each other. And one of the things that you've mentioned to me before when we've talked previously is that you've implemented PFA and SBT in Hawaii with that trauma-assumed perspective. Can you share some of your insights into how this has shaped your approach, especially and particularly in creating a trauma-informed and supportive environment for your clients?
Totally. I'm really glad that you mentioned PFA and SBT. Both are the work of the brilliant Dr. Hanley, who really inspired me a lot to come up with a model that hinges on non-contingent reinforcement. The way that these two things tie together is if you were to have a purely non-contingent reinforcement model, it would mirror very closely what is called the enhanced choice model, which is a part of PFA-SBT. When you're doing practical functional assessments, skill-based training, in a clinic, in home, wherever the setting is, you definitely have sort of programming there that is designed to build communication. And then they have other steps called toleration, relinquishing, and transitioning, and then enduring to various degrees. The thing that is really helpful about this is even in that model, there is some contingencies there, but students are allowed to regain their autonomy when there's a precursor to perhaps a behavior that may be maladaptive behavior, it may be self-injurious, it may be something that's a crisis behavior that could actually really harm them, and we don't want that to occur. So when we hear perhaps somebody remove their assent, like we were talking about before, when we see them, maybe it's just as simple as a facepalm or like a grunt, or perhaps just they tell us themselves with their consent over and over, I'm not going to do this. And they use a functional communicative response telling them, I would rather do what I was doing before this or have it my way. Then we can relinquish upon that indication, whether they say it or they remove assent before a crisis occurs. And this relinquishing the autonomy has been proven to not be significant enough reinforcement of crisis behaviors to maintain them. In fact, if all you're doing is maybe maintaining some occasional, like, I don't want to do this grunt to remove your assent, that's okay. That's not dangerous. And it's a perfectly natural behavior. No harm, no foul. The issue here, right, why do we need to go any further than this, some people may ask. And I'm sure Dr. Hanley could tell you, because he invented the enhanced choice model after he tried so hard, I could tell from watching, if anybody's seen his today's ABA or any of the PFA-SBT trainings he has on his website, it's very hard to continue maybe when a student has now realized what the programming is. They know each step, and they know that even if potentially they're going to do the things they did before, sometimes it's going to escalate. It's going to be a harder skill the next time, and they're going to start thinking that, okay, maybe this is just somebody telling me I can't have it my way so that they could tell me not this time, and see how I tolerate that reaction. And you'll get a lot of people looking at that type of programming and thinking, what is the goal of this now? If I'm fully comprehending, I know the steps, and now it just seems like I'm being taught to ask for something so that occasionally they can not give it to me. It seems like it's a time to drive me nuts, is what some of the kids may have said in the PFA-SBT training itself. So I think I'm quoting one of them there. And no, Dr. Hanley wasn't trying to drive them nuts. He's a good guy. So he decided to bring out the enhanced choice model. This is something that really inspired me because it involves non-contingent reinforcement. You can use it a lot with more higher verbal learners, but also learners that have had a trauma filled history that precludes them from dealing with a traditional PFA-SBT hierarchy of developing those skills because of the compliance involved. When you have enhanced choice, you are allowed to go home anytime. You're allowed to hang out, have some non-contingent reinforcement available at the clinic, in your telehealth, in your in-home services, or you can choose to walk through the door to work on skills. And if you are having a great time hanging out and you decide that you're comfortable enough that you want to work on skills and have the freedom to remove yourself from the work environment at your own discretion, this right here. It creates a lot of autonomy for the student. It creates a little bit of non-contingent reinforcement by allowing control of the situation as well. So I got to thinking, how can I apply this in a broader fashion to serve the population that perhaps they hear of ABA and they immediately fill their mind with all the negative things they've heard, all the bad news, all the times where perhaps methods have not been used in the most appropriate way for that student, for that learner, and perhaps many of the times where methods have been used incorrectly, and that has resulted in them seeing a story on the news or on social media that is a true story and concerns them deeply that, oh, my child is in these services. Is this going to happen to them, right? Mm-hmm. If people are concerned about that, or if perhaps the student themselves thinks that any programming is going to be like that, this is a population that is going to come into a traditional ABA already feeling uneasy. They're not going to want to comply with your first instruction, and they're not going to get that first reward. And furthermore, they're going to feel like this is something that they're going to have to do extra work for in a lot of ways. When we have non-contingent reinforcement right off the bat, you'll see this a lot in traditional ABA on the first day, where you indulge your client, you play, you build rapport, right? You limit demands because you want to build that trust. If you are able to create the environment where that trust is going to be looking as the same formal similarity day by day in a discriminative fashion where the student, the learner can recognize, okay, I'm at least going to get my my music. I'm at least going to, no matter what, get to hang out outside in the sunshine where I like to be, or in the garden, or at the very least get access to or my favorite video games on a time-based schedule based on how often I ask for them, right? This is something that's going to tell that student, okay, this is different. This programming is not going to limit me from accessing these reinforcers, but they're still going to be there to teach me useful things once I'm ready. How do we do this? A lot of people might be saying, how can you really teach behaviors without having the reward be contingent upon performing that? And it is very simple. A lot of times, these behaviors and compliance and things like students learning new things that they haven't practiced before, they occur naturally by chance, constantly, all the time. We as behavior analysts know if we see something and it's something good, we want to praise that right away. We didn't train that, but hey, you know, you can use that. That's great. You know, we want that. And why did it occur spontaneously, naturally, on its own without any help, even outside a session? Maybe when parents weren't even around. Why did that occur? The student was having fun. Maybe they were trying some new things out, and they felt comfortable enough to push through any little hiccups they had to adapt through in order to succeed. Occasionally, students can't do this on their own, so it helps a lot to have a therapist there to facilitate. One thing that a therapist can do is identify perhaps which elements are missing in this student's daily non-contingent reinforcement schedule. Many people refer to things like this as a sensory diet. It's a common term. What is a sensory diet? Sometimes people say, okay, well, we're going to give this amount of sensory engagement, you know, per day. We're going to make sure that this student has it so that they can feel self-regulated and they can have a way to cope with difficult feelings that involve a sensory function or an automatically reinforcing behavior. Why are automatically reinforcing behaviors so important? Because those themselves, they're also very much tied into non-contingent reinforcement, right? We talked about breathing before, right? For instance, you breathe and the air comes in and you feel, refreshed until you need to breathe again, right? This is very much naturally occurring. You didn't have to comply with the air in order to receive it into your lungs. You are feeling the automatic reinforcement. Of course, I'm comparing this to sensory behaviors we often see, like what is hand flapping, or what skin picking for a lot of people, maybe biting, mouth behaviors. These are automatically reinforcing, and perhaps they occur all the time and require a replacement behavior for that person's health. A lot of things you can provide non-contingently that are sensory will reduce these behaviors without the need for compliance, for instance, to go into your quiet hands, right? Instead of doing all the fun things you usually do with your hands, rather than going into quiet hands, perhaps you can teach the students how to do something with their hands, like, this is a good example. My fiance crochets these wonderful flowers, but, something simple, right? Perhaps, doing something that requires a lot of hand motions, like crocheting is an example. Juggling, I like to use often. I really wish I had my juggling materials with me right now. But other things that, waving a fan, cooling yourself off, something that bears formal similarity, something that mimics the same sensory sensation as the behaviors that occur on these routine schedules. So I want to specify, right? It's not all about just having the same behaviors over again being rewarded no matter what, right? The key to the non-contingent reinforcement is to provide that same type of reinforcement. Sometimes it can be from a different behavior, a different skill, and a functional replacement as well. And sometimes it can be from perhaps they're doing something that is distracting, non-preferred to everyone else, but it's harmless. It's something that they do to self-regulate. Perhaps it's just a matter of finding the specified time and schedule for that to happen in an appropriate place. And all these things, you may have heard them before because, yes, they're just a part of traditional ABA. And non-contingent reinforcement works in ABA, it works worldwide, it works in nature, and it's really a part of what makes all things really, really tick. Everything has its own environment, its own context, and therefore its own expectations that it really needs to not only thrive, but also survive. So if perhaps we have a trauma-assumed approach where we are going to give these things freely without perhaps a quid pro quo interaction, and then later on we're going to be having a even more reinforcing reward involved, when things go right, we have two rewards operating. That's totally fine. A lot of times people are worried again about reinforcing the maladaptive behavior. But if we look at Dr. Hanley's enhanced choice model, we know that releasing that autonomy back to the individual during that precursor stage before a crisis is not significant enough to maintain the crisis behavior that normally occurs when those things are not relinquished, right? When the ability to take a break or to flap your hands every once in a while or to potentially watch your favorite shows is removed, those things, they can be a setting event, especially if that student really was looking forward to that. If that's something that they tend to be driven by, right? Something that, for lack of a better metaphor, some of the things that people live for, right? And the ultimate goal of ABA, whether we have contingencies or not, is to increase quality of life for the individuals we serve, giving them dignity, making them feel as though they can enjoy all the fruits of life that are available to them and have happy lives, right? So when we have non-contingent reinforcement-based models, our hope is that this will build enough trust and enough dignity for our students that they will be able to maybe one day go ahead and see how it goes with a contingency later on. Perhaps they come through a non-contingent reinforcement program and people have figured out what is their daily sensory diet, what is their daily need, how often do they need to perform this behavior. They match that frequency, maybe undercutting the frequency just a little bit so that you can give it slightly before they need it. And that student has built enough trust that now, okay, well, we now pair ABA with this. We now think, okay, people are going to at least know what I need, listen to me, be paying attention to my needs, and trying to help me consistently. And now I can trust a traditional PFA-SBT model. Now I can trust a traditional ABA model that doesn't even involve PFA-SBT, perhaps. And we see here, right, we want to be part of the solution, right? NCR is not there to alienate those who provide other options. But if you were to think of the autistic population on a normal curve, we would have one standard deviation of the mean able to participate in some ABA services. And then what do we have with the other two standard deviations on the end? That is about, let's say, 32% of the population left over after we take that one standard deviation away. That is, again, they're not able to receive ABA services. They've had either such a severe behavioral history or such a severe traumatic history in their life, whether it involved their therapy services or not, that they're not going to even enter that program. So we don't want to leave these students behind, right? We want to maybe make amends for perhaps some of the things that they have experienced in life. And what is the better way to do that than by non-contingently providing them with the things that make them happy while teaching them useful skills that help them to make friends, have fun, and enjoy themselves? So I said it's to be inclusive. It is to include that last two standard deviations that are left out, as well as the first standard deviation, to bring a model that everybody can palate, everybody can accept in order to create that inclusive environment that we talked about before and build enough trust so that people ultimately have fun. So again, the goal of NCR to create inclusivity. The goal of ABA is to create a joyful life that people can love to live every single day. And those two things very much go hand in hand.
What a beautiful message. I mean, honestly, I literally was just so happy hearing like everything you had to say, especially when it came to quality of life, flexibility in programming. You know, far too many times I've seen those BCBAs who are just like, you know, you have to do DTT, you have to do things at the table. And then I come in and I'm like, this is not how life works. Life is not spent at a table. Life is not spent doing DTT tasks, you know, in a specific area where they can't access contingencies. There's no way for them to attain those things because you're preventing them. So that being said, you know, there definitely is a call for more flexibility that even goes beyond PFA and SBT. So what do you say to the flexibility? Like, how can you operationally define what this flexibility might look like? And why is it so crucial for successful interventions?
You know, I'm really glad that you hinged on the flexibility, because it really reminded me that I forgot to bring up Ogden Lindsley's precision teaching, which is a huge part of this. So in my model that I've been developing for the non-contingent reinforcement-based services, we have what we call precision NCR. And this is an adaptation of precision teaching, where we actually have a standard acceleration chart. If you're not familiar with standard acceleration charts, I'll give you a brief illustration. Imagine your normal graph with two lines. You know, one's going up, usually one's going down, right? One's down here, one's up here. We're going to be tracking the skills. So we're hoping they're going to go up. We're going to track the behaviors that are potentially harmful. We're going to hope these go down, or maybe they stabilize rather than going up, right? And we have two lines on this graph. The way Ogden Lindsley had designed his data sheets makes it so simple to chart these behaviors on the same graph that he actually envisioned even children would be able to use it on other children. Originally intended for others to adapt precision teaching into their own fields and add precision as a prefix. So what I've done here is I have created a design for how we are going to both track when a student needs NCR and what are the skills and goals that matter most to the family and them, and how is this contingency affecting the increase of skill as well as the decrease of non-preferred or maladaptive behaviors, whatever you want to call it, challenging behaviors. Some may not be so intense, you want to call them maladaptive. And I honestly do like the word challenging better, because it's a lot about how we perceive things when we consider how are we going to respond to them, right? And if we have this mentality that, right, these are problems, problem behaviors constantly, right? This is going to perhaps create a mental bias where we're not going to have enough patience for that individual. They're being challenged by life. And this is indicative, right, that something did not get delivered to them reinforcement-wise. And now what's happening is natural frustration, aggression, or as B.F. Skinner would call this, extinction. Extinction, frustration, aggression, those are all synonyms. If you really get down to the science, when your expectation is not fulfilled, you have natural aggression, is basically the science there. I commonly bring up the example of pigeons. Even pigeons will do this. If you do not provide them the food they're expecting, when they peck the button and there's a pigeon next to them, what happens? They attack the pigeon next to them. Why? Not because they hate that pigeon. Yeah. not for personal reasons. It's just natural. Natural to feel aggression. And knowing this as behavior analysts begs the question, okay, for our students who really do not need to feel frustrated and aggressive throughout their day, what is a more palatable treatment plan that they can thrive in? And again, we arrive back in the state of NCR. We maybe see their behaviors and their frequency at a certain level and their skills at a certain level. And all of a sudden, oh, whoop, skills going down, whoop, behavior's going up. What does this indicate to us? There is a missing element in this non-contingent reinforcement schedule. We need to find out what the function of their behavior is and provide that to them on a fixed or variable time-based schedule that is brief enough and its intervals to allow them to be refreshed, ready to learn. As Dr. Hanley might say, have a state of happiness, relaxation, and engagement. Have HRE before starting to engage in learning.
Ah, love it. I love it. You know, and you mentioned too, like when it comes to, when it comes to PFA and SBT, and when those behaviors start to go up and when those skills start to go down, Of course, not every approach is perfect, but it's really about finding what that missing piece is. How do you feel that NCR addresses or complements any sort of issue that you have maybe seen within doing PFA and SBT?
I'll give you one more. You know, it addresses all sorts of issues just within traditional ABA and PFA SBT. So one thing you can apply to both if you work in either model currently is NCR, always. For instance, you'll often see PFA SBT environments are very much enriched to begin with. You'll see the room is designed to be fun, or the walls are themed to the student's, you know, favorite thing, or they have the favorite toys present already, you know, for them to have a happy, relaxing, and engaging experience to begin with. But you'll also see, like we talked about earlier, building rapport, even on the first aid pairing in ABA, sometimes at the start of each session, indulging your students so that they get off to a good start. And throughout the day, when we run probably the most important programs in traditional ABA, or PFA SBT, we often use something similar to non-contingent reinforcement. For instance, with potty training, when we're going potty, what do we do naturally? We realize they're gonna go at least 3 times a day, for instance, for that student, and we're gonna try and make sure each one of those times there's an opportunity, and they're with the toilet, and there's a chance that things will work out and we'll be able to reward that. But even so, if you were to, let's say, do that to somebody, you're going to make that trip to the bathroom as fun and reinforcing in the way that particular specific individual likes as humanly possible. And you're already coming up with non-contingent reinforcement schedules, undercutting the frequency of the behavior, you know, soiling the clothing, for instance, and providing a functional reward that matches what they wanted, what they're doing, you know, maybe that they don't want to break away from, or perhaps even for some students, matches the squishy stimulus of feces, right? Right? So we have slime, we've got mud, we've got Play-Doh. What do you guys think those things are most similar to? You know, of course, other things, but they can be, you know, a squishy substance that can provide a similar reinforcement that some students may have when, let's say, they are manipulating feces in certain ways during potty training or bathroom and continence programming. They often say anybody can develop continence, right? And this is for anybody. I do want to say all these things I'm saying, they are not specific to just autism, and they do help autistic people, but every single person can benefit from NCR. And also, for instance, they've proven that every single person can learn continence in a setting with a very routine schedule, in terms of providing the opportunity, rewarding the successful instances, and having consistency. The textbook gives the example of those alarms in the underwear that alert the therapist that there's a little bit of wet, or there's a little bit of feces in the underwear or the garment that the student is wearing, or the patient, or whatever the context is, and they are now aware that, okay, now is the time in this person's day where they need to go to the bathroom, and we have the data that suggests the alarm went off at this time. Now we know when to non-contingently reinforce this student. And overall, even if you were to read Cooper, even if you were very much incapable of most things, perhaps, let's say you cannot speak, see, hear, taste, smell, or anything like that. Let's say you have all sorts of hosts of difficulties. You can still learn to perform this behavior based on this schedule, based on this non-contingent reinforcement, because it's just how we operate as living beings. We get reinforcement, it affects our behavior. It is called a behavior altering effect. Though, when we have non-contingent as opposed to contingent reinforcement, what does this do? It also issues a value altering effect, which is the most powerful thing we can use because it increases the motivating operations that beget that behavior. Before, you're giving that stimulus to signal, okay, it's time to perform. In this case, we're talking about going to the bathroom, right? But before that, we're already in this happy, trusting environment where we have an establishing operation to get up and go do the thing that we need to do or achieve the reinforcer that's in the bathroom that's there for us already, that we already want more than anything there. For me, when I was a kid, it was the Starship Voyager for some reason. My dad had that on the toilet, and it was like the potty starship. And, you know, for anybody, there's all sorts of magical memories that I'm sure we all have very near and dear to our hearts. And what were those? That was non-contingent attention from mom. That was non-contingent, you know, fun time with grandma and grandpa every weekend. Or that was a non-contingent feeling of being needed by a younger sibling, perhaps somebody that you teach and watch grow and maybe learn about yourself while doing so. These are all very real-world examples of how non-contingent reinforcement sneaks up on us and it makes our world go round, gives us things to live for day by day, and it can affect what things we end up wanting to learn.
I love it. I love it so much. And, you know, the memories that we get, you know, thinking about some of those NCR moments, like NCR time with our mom and grandma, and even though we may not necessarily think like that as children, you know, it is considered NCR. And on the note of NCR, by the way, today's first code word is NCR. What we've been talking about all podcasts is NCR. So that is our first code word. I absolutely agree. You know, it's kind of amazing because, you know, growing up, we look at it as like quality time with our parents or quality time with our siblings or quality times with our, you know, favorite people. But when you put it in a behavior analytic lens, it is considered non-contingent reinforcement. So that's where that bridge is gapped is bridged. I guess I can't even think.
Absolutely. And I do want to say that parents, this is your bread and butter, okay? And a lot of times parents are so worried. They're saying, what if I stray from the treatment plan? What if I reinforce the wrong thing? What if I encourage something that ends up being not so good for the child by giving in or by not being a robot at this time? And nobody asked you to be a robot. First of all, please don't think we asked you to do that, even if we behavior analysts look very robotic at times. I know we tend to. You are a parent, and that means that you love your child, and that alone is a non-contingent reinforcer. I don't think the child really did anything to deserve your love when it was born. It's just born, right? It's just there. And you're loving it without expecting anything from it in return at first. This is something that parents maintain as a privilege, as a superpower, their entire lives. You are that person's parent. There's only one of you, and you've been providing a non-contingent reinforcer this person's entire life just by existing in their presence. So if you feel like you slipped up or you gave in and you didn't follow through on this, you didn't ignore that, or you didn't block such and such, don't feel bad at all, and leave deciding when and when not to do that to the clinicians who are not potentially the most important person in the student's life. If you happen to be the most important person in somebody's life and you remove yourself from that person, even temporarily, that can be a little bit traumatic in other ways. Perhaps that creates other types of inadvertent punishers that we never even realize. There's a lot of difficult things that can happen when we mess up something that's naturally occurring, right? Like parental love and respect and dignity to their children, you know, giving in to your child because you love them every once in a while, you know, not having the strength to go on is okay because you're going to provide that unconditional love and understanding at that time. And that is going to build a stronger trust for later on when you're learning something else. So don't feel bad, right? My advice would be to just think about, when did this happen? How often does it occur? And maybe perhaps, how can I make sure that it occurs at a rate that my child, my student, my patient can accept? And, you know, how much are they enjoying it? Do they love this? I'll never take it from them. They love this. Take, you know, we'll make them work for something else. But this is something they love and need. It's okay if it slips through the cracks. That's non-contingent reinforcement. That can be used to anybody's benefit for learning, for just feeling good, right? Not necessarily always learning, but you just want to feel good, right? Maybe the behavior of doing certain things only occurs when you simultaneously feel good, right? So you're going to need to bring that happy, relaxed, engaged environment. You need to bring that feeling good in before anybody even hears somebody say, give me the pencil and I'll give you a gold star. That was a horrible example, but for instance, before you even hear something that might be more clinical, more school oriented, more boring, perhaps less intrinsic to your real values, your needs, you're going to need to already feel like you've had your coffee. You've talked to your mom in the past year, you know. I'm just kidding. You should talk to your mom much more often than that, especially if you're a kid. But, you know, you don't want to feel sad or upset going into learning. And if you remove those setting events, you are creating an establishing operation where now, okay, there is a value-altering effect that makes this reinforcement I'm about to get from doing the simple activity a lot more powerful, right? So you might have a contingency after non-contingent reinforcement. But what's going to happen? It's going to be more effective. It's going to work with more joy being delivered to the student upon receiving that reward because they had the value increased by these motivating operations around them that establish comfort, establish joy, or perhaps abolish sadness, abolish trauma, abolish the opportunity for them to feel left out, alone, secluded, etc., right? When that's not going to happen, and we know that, when we're walking across a tightrope and we know there's a net, maybe we'll give it a try, right? For instance, for lack of a better metaphor, but other things work too, right? If we are learning to drive with the full knowledge that there's airbags, there's seatbelts, there's brakes that work non-contingently, we're gonna feel a lot more comfortable than thinking, man, I really hope these things work each time. Maybe your car is broken down and it doesn't work every time. Maybe your brakes are out. Who knows? You know, you don't know if it's going to work for your driving test. How bad is that driving test going to go without these establishing operations that promote confidence and abolishing operations that abolish fear, right? It might not pass if you're feeling like anxious that you don't even know your brakes are gonna work because your car's so old and you're taking the driving test. And it goes for all sorts of different examples, but I'm sure everybody has their own circumstance where this specifically applies to them. And I'd ask them to find that circumstance, think about it, and then start thinking about the student that they care for, the child that they love, or the patient that needs them, and what might be that equivalent? What might bear what is stimulus equivalence for that to this person, right? What is their Jimmy Fallon? You know, what do they need five times a week, I guess? By the way, if he watches this, maybe he'll go back to five. I don't know. That would be incredible, but I highly doubt he's going to check it out. Jimmy, take my word for it. I think a lot of people have gotten used to you doing the Tonight Show every night. So, if you remove that, we don't know what's going to happen.
Well, one can only hope that Jimmy Fallon is listening to this.
One can only hope. Somebody email it to him, please.
Yes. You know, and it's so interesting. Something you said that really stands out to me is, you know, sometimes things do fall through the cracks, but it's okay. And there's a quote that I typically will, you know, say and kind of like remind myself, everyone is a human first, you know, human first, everything else second. It is okay that if at one time where it's like, you feel like you have to battle between, you know, making your kid happy and really trying to like, you know, like pick and choose your battles. Sometimes certain battles are not worth fighting. And at the same time, you know, we're looking at, you know, life, we're looking at the child's life, we're looking at all the trauma, you know, we have to be trauma assumed as clinicians. So given the focus on trauma assumed care, what are some key components or practices that help ensure that the approach remains sensitive and supportive to the individual's trauma history?
So it's a very important question. We do call it trauma assumed because oftentimes we don't know everything right away, do we? And so to be truly trauma informed, you must know about all the trauma or potentially sometimes even be a social worker, which is why if you hear Dr. Hanley talk as well, he speaks about the difference between trauma assumed and trauma informed. By assuming there has been some trauma and this student is here, probably as a, you know, result of not being able to engage with other traditional programs based on that trauma, by assuming that already, starting out with a skill programming that does not involve contingencies, that doesn't involve, okay, you will not get this until you perform this. By having that already as a baseline, we're assuming that perhaps in the past, there's been some trauma. We don't want to trigger, bring that up. We want to make sure that that possibility is removed in this therapy setting. If you were to look at PFA-SBT for a moment, as opposed to the NCR model, you would see that, okay, we have assumed that crisis behaviors occur frequently when students are denied their autonomy. So to be trauma assumed in that aspect, they will relinquish the autonomy once they see that something is indicating there's something wrong or there is a precursor behavior, not quite a crisis, but a small indication that that person is feeling uncomfortable and they're not providing their assent, right? And when you see that, I see you, I know that your assent is no longer there, and I'll tell you, I'm going to honor your dignity by allowing you to play Roblox and not look at me, do whatever you want until you're ready to perhaps, or potentially you're satiated on Roblox, you're bored enough that you might come and ask me, hey, what's up? You know what I mean? That's essentially how we can operate in a trauma-assumed fashion. And to be honest, it sounds like a lot of fun because it is, right? To be trauma-assumed means that you are going to have a lot more gentler, a lot more approachable, palatable treatment planning in general. Whether it's NCR, PFA-SBT, enhanced choice model, or traditional ABA that still operates based on the assumption that, okay, the student has a unique history that has been filled with trauma. Trauma that they perhaps can't describe, or perhaps I just don't know about, and is maybe even sometimes none of my business, right? So there's a lot of advantages to having trauma assumed right there. You're able to provide dignity. You're also able to avoid unnecessary prying that might trigger certain crisis events and create a environment already that is imbued, enriched, and has some degree of non-contingent reinforcement of autonomy, control, And Skinner would say, escape, which is not a bad thing. We all need escape. I call it release, right? That's maybe perhaps, maybe that's more person-centered, release, right? Instead of escape. Having those already present in a trauma-assumed environment is inherently non-contingent reinforcement. And are they going to ever remove those things in a PFA-SBT model? No, they're not going to remove the ability for that to happen. The only thing that differs here is they are going to try progressively harder to increase the time the student can tolerate without those things. This, again, is going to be stopped as soon as the student indicates that there is a problem, they have precursors, they indicate there might be a crisis. These programs are going to be removed temporarily, go back to HRE, happy, relaxed, engaged states. And potentially, you know, if this happens consistently and there's no happy, relaxed engagement in a PFA-SBT model, they're going to try the enhanced choice model. They're there, they're doing it, they're having a fun time. Though potentially there's already been some stimulus control in that environment, right? They're going to be seeing, okay, well, this is still work room, this is home, and this is hangout, right? There's go home, work, hangout, right? The hangout is the non-contingent reinforcement, but if they never have entered that hangout, each time they chose to either go home or work on skills, because that's what people are used to, right? That's what kind of we have maybe mistakenly given off the impression that that is all we do in ABA. Then the students are never going to get an opportunity to exist in an enriched environment that engages them with the non-contingent reinforcement that specifically drives them, that might be more powerful than other reinforcers. So we start there. If we hang out in this NCR model for a while, ideally, this is again going to create enough trust that students are going to be able to participate with all sorts of programming, whether it be ABA based or not, whether it's social functions or, you know, potentially a sports team or, you know, something that could be really fun and really enriching, right? Now they've at least had one experience where they're able to learn something, they're able to trust the individual teaching it that they will only give them something positive and they're not going to push them into a state of aggression. And now they can trust others. They can generalize trust to the baseball team or the prom or, you know, to, they can generalize, maybe it's a matter of generalizing trust from your parents to the therapist is another way to think about it as well.
I love that you bring up so many different life examples. I think that, you know, oftentimes we as clinicians only look at what's in front of us right in the moment, but we don't see past what happens in the moment. We aren't looking at life. We're not looking at the child's life as they grow up. We only look at what is in front of us and the function of the behavior in those specific moments. Of course, we can talk about history of reinforcement or, you know, history of punishment, whatever, you know, may have you, but we're not looking at life beyond the client in the setting. You know, that's what I've really like. That's what I feel like is a major flaw within ABA, is that we just look at the client for what we see rather than figure out those private events and figure out that history and figure out that trauma history and really making ABA the individualized service that it is supposed to be for the clients that we serve.
Definitely. There is no standard way that humans should be acting. There is no such thing as a neurotypical personality or brain. There are differences for every person. Nobody is just a typical human, just typical human personality. You know, everybody is their own unique individual, and we have to treat them as such. So in ABA, we may think that, yes, there is a science that applies to all things, but we have to also think deeper and not go outside of behavior analysis necessarily, but we are thinking about what are these equivalent stimuli that may mean so much more to this individual than we are realizing. Why is hand flapping so important? Perhaps they, you know, they have really hot hands. I don't know, you know, something like that. Something I thought of because it's getting quite hot here in Hawaii. You know, you can help that in all sorts of other ways as well, and make sure that you match the schedule that the hand flapping is on so that you can provide an alternative and still provide the same reinforcement with that NCR.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, I want to go to our second code word. Our second and final code word is dignity. That is D-I-G-N-I-T-Y. That is dignity. And excuse me. Excuse me. Okay. Speaking of dignity, you know, I'm really excited for NCR to really be talked about in this podcast because it really isn't truly talked about enough. And that being said, what do you see as the future of NCR ascent-based reinforcement and enhanced choice models in ABA?
So I am currently developing this program because I would like to see an increase in participation in all of these programs based on the trust that I'm hoping this model will bring. Currently, DaVinci NCR Services LLC is working very hard to create a positive, inclusive environment through advocacy, outreach, and disseminating knowledge through CEU courses, as well as consultation involving NCR. So we started a bit already. We're trying to show everybody what is the way that they can naturally use this. And our ultimate goal is to generate enough funding so that we can create a unique direct service model that is provided out here in Hawaii and hopefully in states beyond. So currently, if you go to DaVinciNCRServices.org, you can see what we're all about. You can see all our CEUs available on things we just talked about, and among other important things like sleep science, as well as bilingual approaches and introductory lessons as well for people who they've never even entered the human services field before. And you can access those all online. Though, if we were to have our direct service model be a wide success, both nationally and internationally, as we plan, then we're hoping to see a broader acceptance and maybe a bit of forgiveness to our field that we all know we got into in order to help people with. And unfortunately, you know, when the perception of our field has shifted to the point where not so many people think that we're out to just help, right? They may think that ABA is out to just be right, I've heard, or be controlling or overbearing. When we get those reputations, I'm sure as behavior analysts, we all start to think, how do we get here? You know, this is not what I stand for necessarily. I don't stand for being overbearing and being, you know, controlling or a robot, as we talked about before. How can we better our reputation? If we use non-contingent reinforcement, people will start to see that this science is more than just that. And it can really benefit not just autistic individuals, not just people, or not just the environment, but everybody as a community. And once we get there, I'm hoping that, again, we will see a broader acceptance of services nationally, internationally, worldwide, I suppose, where they can see, okay, well, if this is not working, we can still use this science in a gentler fashion that this person can palate and will be somewhat effective in order to keep them safe, happy, and learning. We also have to bear in mind what things are feasible. So, you know, sometimes some students, maybe all they're going to be able to to learn are certain things that are going to help them survive, help them get by, but not really going to be going into quantum physics anytime soon, right? We'll put it that way. They're focused on learning daily living. They're focused on learning speech and focused on learning how to do various skills that help them survive. And at that level alone, we can fulfill all of those goals with non-contingent reinforcement and leave the more complex goals to after the student has built enough trust in order to learn them in either the general education environment, which would be awesome, or, you know, any environment where they have been met at the educational level they currently exist at. So I'm hoping, again, it's going to go hand in hand. I do want to specify we're not trying to replace anybody with this model, and we really want the entirety of this field to start working together, handing things off, collaborating, right? Making sure that the best and most appropriate service model goes to the individual that needs it, and not something that is perhaps a incorrect fit for that person. Once we have that, we are not going to be forcing anybody to comply with anything they don't want to, because they can already try the NCR model. With that option available, I'm hoping, grand scheme of things, we will see a non-contingently reinforced world that has been shown that ABA therapists do care about giving unconditional love and understanding to their students and making sure that they just live happy lives above all else. Not that we care about just being right or controlling or being robots, or not that we just perhaps don't want to look at past unfortunate events. We study them diligently and think constantly about how can we do better. And this is a way. Another way is through representing the self-advocates of people who consume ABA. Something that I've been working very hard on with a colleague of mine from my show, Endian ABA, with Martin and Dan, Martin Slingstad, is the U.S. Autism Show Hawaii. We're hoping that we will have a lot of people come down here November 2nd in order to see autistic professionals and performers and advocates and people who support neurodiverse populations and inclusion in presenting in order to show people how extremely talented, how valuable all these individuals are to our society and what experiences they have to offer, right? What can we learn about what people need from these unique perspectives? A lot. And again, I do want to thank you again, Michelle, because I am very excited to have you presenting among, you know, a lot of my other favorite people, Brian Middleton, bearded behaviorist, Dr. Shelby Dorsey of the SD Store. We have Kelsey McKinnery of the Calm Crate, who is somebody I've recently become a very big fan of. Do check her out. And many other activists, advocates, professionals, even some performers who just support autism and also share perspectives about their lived experience with autism. Through this, we're hoping that we are going to be able to show the world where we can start with maybe some NCR, where we can start in terms of repairing the reputation of human services to the autistic population. And where that starts is just by listening to them, right? Listening to your friends and family too, listening to everybody and, you know, making sure that you give space overall, create space for other people. And what do we call that? We call it inclusion. So come on down. If you'd like to see our presenters, if you want to find out more about the speakers, do check out the DaVinci NCR Services.org org homepage for the U.S. Autism Show Hawaii. It's going to be lots of fun, and we'd love to see you either down here in Oahu or online. We'll be using StreamYard for that. So there is a virtual option for those who can't make it all the way out here. I know it might be tough.
Well, I am so excited to not only be present, but to be presenting in that. And that's going to be such a great time. I'm super excited about being there as well. And I'm super excited for tonight's episode. I want to thank you again, Daniel, for taking the time out to talk to me all about NCR and ascent-based programming. Is there anything that you want to leave our audience with for before we head out tonight?
If you guys have time, please do check out the new season of ND and ABA with Martin and Dan. It should be coming out this weekend. And depending upon when this is released, I do think it should be the same weekend. And hear more from my brilliant co-host, Martin Slingstad. He is a wonderful autistic self-advocate, a therapist, an author, a Special Olympics athlete, you name it. He really does it all. He is able to get April to be Autism Awareness and Acceptance Month through the city of Santa Clara by talking to the mayor. He advocates constantly, and he actually planned to be here with us today, but that guy, he just does so much, he could not make it. So check him out if you want to hear what he has to say. He fills me with hope daily. He's a really inspiring guy. And check out his website too, Spire Autism, and see what he's all about with his programs for first responders, teaching them about autism, and his book, his speaking engagements. And really, you know, if you have the time, read his book, Chatterbox, My Life with Autism. I read it and it changed my life. It's really one of the most inspirational stories about somebody's entire life on the spectrum up to and through adulthood and the challenges he's faced and overcome, as I'm sure many people have. I'm sure that you have as well, and I have too. But if you guys check out Martin's, you'll see that if he can overcome a lot of different things, and some outside of autism, he has faced many challenges. If he can overcome all that, then anything is possible, right? I'll give you an example. This guy, had a spine injury, and he is a 5-time medalist in the Special Olympics, and he's got, you know, steel rods that he needs to make sure stay in place. So if you think about that alone, you know, he's just, you know, an amazing individual, and it's perspectives like his and yours, Michelle, and many of the individuals I mentioned about the U.S. Autism Show that really show us the value of autistic people in our community, the endurance, the special skills, and the amount of compassion they have despite challenges. Really, you know, nobody is alike, but if we are going to give a chance for people to show us how amazing they can be, oftentimes we're going to be surprised and amazed. So give them that chance. Check out My Life with Autism, the book, and go ahead and, you know, check out our podcast. I'm sure that Martin will be thrilled. You know, DM us on Instagram if you guys wanna talk, you wanna chat. We love talking to the population of audience members. We're open to feedback, and you know, nothing brings us more joy than figuring out, you know, what needs to be talked about these days. So I know that was long-winded, but you know, I do wanna thank you again, Michelle, for having me out here, because you know, there's nothing I'd love to talk about more than the value of autistic people in our society, the value of non-contingent reinforcement, and the exciting things that we as a field in ABA are trying to do in order to support this beautiful community we've come to serve that has autism, as well as other things.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for coming out tonight. I'm really happy that I got to talk to you. And thank you, everyone, for tuning in tonight. I've been your host, Michelle Zeman. Be sure to check us out on the next one. And I hope you have a good night. Bye, guys.
Bye.